Good morning, everybody. Good to see you out this morning. We're in our study in Acts. We'll be in the end of Acts chapter 22 and moving into chapter 23. I'd like for us to do a quick review. As you know, Paul's on his third journey, and he has completed that, and he's now in Jerusalem. That's where he's been. While he's on his journey, remember we talked about he had written the book of Galatians, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and also the letter to the Romans. So Paul's now at the end of his journey and in Jerusalem and dealing with several situations, say. All right. So in the way of review, something was mentioned, I think, Wednesday night. We talked about Paul's commitment, his resolve. I'd like to go back to Acts chapter 20 and look at verses 22 through 24. So let's go back there first as we review this. Acts chapter 20, starting in verse 22 through 24. It says, "And see now, I go bound in the Spirit to Jerusalem, not knowing the things that will happen to me there, except that the Holy Spirit testifies in every city, saying that chains and tribulations await me. But none of those things move me, nor do I count my life dear to myself, so that I may finish my race with joy and the ministry which I received from the Lord Jesus to testify to the gospel of the grace of God." And then jump over to Acts chapter 21. Let's look at verses 11 through 14. "When he had come to us, he took Paul's belt, bound his own hands and feet, and said, 'Thus says the Holy Spirit, so shall the Jews at Jerusalem bind the man who owns this belt and deliver him into the hands of the Gentiles.' And when he heard these things, both we and those from that place pleaded with him not to go up to Jerusalem. Then Paul answered, 'What do you mean by weeping and breaking my heart? For I am ready not only to be bound, but also to die at Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus.' So when he would not be persuaded, we ceased saying, 'The will of the Lord be done.'" And we've mentioned this a few times, but we look at Paul and his desire, his will to be committed to the Lord, to be committed to what he's been given to do. Such a great example for us. He knows what he's facing, yet he's willing to face that. He even says, I'm willing to die if necessary. Okay. Then we jump up to verse 27. And we see where some of the trouble starts. It says, "When the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd, and they laid hands on him." So as usual, like Paul, what happens? Paul goes out. He's he's followed by these Jews, and they see him in the temple, and they lay their hands on him. So now Paul's got another situation to deal with. And then 28 and 29 in that same chapter says, "Crying out, men of Israel, help this man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple, and has defiled this holy place. For they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, with him in the city, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple." So they make these accusations about Paul, and he says that he's teaching men everywhere against the people, against the law, and against this place. And he's bringing these Greeks into the temple. These are all false accusations about Paul. And so this gets the crowd riled up, and they then, in verse 31, have a situation where the Romans step in. So now as they were seeking to kill him, in verse 31, "News came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. He immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul." So now we've got Paul's here in this situation, got this crowd, got this mob, and they're getting worked up and they want to kill Paul. They begin to beat him. Of course, the Romans step in. They need to get control of this and to find out what's going on. So then at the end of the chapter, after all these things happened to Paul, he then asked, as they were trying to get him out, Paul said, "I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of Nome city, and I implore you to permit me to speak to the people." So now Paul with all this going on, and he says, I want to speak to the people, and he's granted that permission. And we see in verse 40, it says, so when he had given him permission, Paul stood on the stairs and motioned with his hand to the people. And when there was a great silence, he spoke to them in Hebrew, saying. Okay, so now Paul's going to defend himself to the people, to the crowd that's in before him. And he begins to speak. It's interesting to me that Paul, as we've talked about before, that Paul has... got this courage to do this, and he's willing to stand up and speak to them. I think that Paul thinks about maybe where he was at one time, right? And he's trying to convince them of where they are wrong. Okay, in that verse in chapter 22, still reviewing, everything goes pretty good as he explains all this. He goes from the very beginning, right? I'm a Jew. I'm from Tarsus, and he goes from the very beginning, explains everything all through this chapter that we're reading. And at the end, everything's going pretty well, and then, of course, we know that one word comes out, and he says that he was told to do what? To teach to the Gentiles, okay? So he was to teach to the Gentiles. Now, when they hear this, what happens to them? What does it say about them? And they stopped listening, didn't they? Yeah, they stopped. They said, "Yeah, we're not gonna listen to this, right?"
I don't know how many there are, but I think for sure three instances of the same kind of scenario where Peter and John are he goes back into the Old Testament and into the history, and then Stephen does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was, you know, the but in there, and that was, they hear the Gentiles, that's it, they don't want anything to get in.
That's right. That's right.
Put them up until that point, then all of them know.
Yeah. You talk about Stephen, who was there when Stephen was there? Paul was, right? So Paul was on the other side, yeah. So we do see some instances of that, and we see where Paul is trying to convince them, just as in the other cases you mentioned, always trying to convince them, and at this point they're worked up and they're not going to listen to him. Okay, so all that goes on, verse 24 in this chapter is where we ended Wednesday night, I believe. It says, the commander ordered him to be brought into the barracks and said that he should be examined under scourging, so that he might know why they shouted so against him. So now all these things are happening. Again, the commander takes him away from the crowd, and he's still trying to find out what this is they are accusing him of. Okay, let's go to verse 25. That's where we're going to really begin this morning. We'll read verses 25 through 29, and then we can talk about that a little bit. And as he bound him with thongs, Paul said to the centurion who stood by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned? When the centurion heard that, he went and told the commander, saying, take care what you do, for this man is a Roman. Then the commander came and said to him, tell me, are you a Roman? He said, yes. And the commander answered, with a large sum, I obtained this citizenship. And Paul said, but I was born a citizen. Then immediately those who were about to examine him withdrew from him, and the commander was also afraid after he found out that he was a Roman, because he had bound him. So they'd already done something that they shouldn't have done because he was a Roman. But the interesting thing I see is that when the commander speaks to him, he says, you know, I became a Roman how? Yeah, he paid for it. So you could a large sum, it says, so you could buy your way in, you could become a Roman citizen. Paul says what? I was born a Roman. Okay. All right. So at this point, realizing that they had a problem and did not want to do anything else with Paul because of what they found out, they, it says immediately they withdrew from him, okay? And everyone was afraid after they found out that he was a Roman, okay? So they're all afraid now that, you know, what they've done is not a good thing, and they might get in trouble if they didn't do anything else because of finding out this out about Paul. Verse 30 says, the next day, because he wanted to know for certain why he was accused. So, okay, so we go overnight, so this is the next day, and he's still trying to find out what they are accusing him of. He wanted to find out why he was accused by the Jews. He released him from his bonds, commanded the chief priest and all their council to appear, and brought Paul down and set him before them. Okay, so now he thinks, okay, I'm gonna take Paul, I'm gonna put him before the council, their council, and maybe we can find out what it is that they are accusing him of, right? And so we can see it's still not gonna go so well for him. Let's move into chapter 23. Let's see. Okay, 23. Let's read 1 through... We're only going down to verse 10 today, but let's read 1 through 8. Then Paul, looking earnestly at the council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest, Ananias, commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, 'God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law. And do you command me to be struck contrary to the law?' And those who stood by said, 'Do you revile God's high priest?' Then Paul said, 'I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak evil of the ruler of your people.' But when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other were Pharisees, he cried out in the council, 'Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged.' And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For the Sadducees say there is no resurrection, no angel or spirit, but the Pharisees confess both." Okay, so jumping back up to verse 1, it says, Paul looking earnestly. When you think about that, here he is standing before this council, and now he looks at them, and it says earnestly, or he looks at them very firmly, okay? And Paul's, again, we see this courage in Paul, his belief in Jesus, and he's not willing to back down. And he says, "I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." Okay, so let's talk about that for just a minute. I have lived in all good conscience. So what about Paul when he was Saul? What was he doing? Okay, he's persecuting Christians. Yes, yes. So he thought he was doing God's law, right? So he's saying, I even then, I did this in good conscience. It made me think also about when we talked about Apollos. Well, when Apollos was teaching, what was he incorrect about? Baptism of John. Okay. And so was Apollos, do you think he was also teaching a good conscience? Yeah, he was. Okay, so what is similar with these two? Yes, all right. So when they learned the truth, they changed. Okay, so Apollos, when he was taken aside and they told him, you know, what was correct, then he changed. When Paul, of course, was on the road to Damascus, and he was told that he needed to change. He changed, right? He understood. So compare that to these people he's talking to. What is their problem? Yeah, okay, that's true. Well, that's right. That's right. They don't believe in the resurrection. But what was their problem? There's a disbelief, right? I mean, they were presented the same thing that others were presented, right? That believed, and they were not willing to believe. So when I think about Paul, he says, I did this in all good conscience. That is true. But once he realized he was incorrect, as Apollos did, as in our case too, right? If we're wrong about something and it's presented to us, then we should be able to be willing to make that change. Yes, sir. That's right. That's right. Josh said that Paul and Apollos were willing to change, and these Jews were not. They were caught up in their power, and they weren't willing to change. So that's just one of my thoughts about that first verse, and just think about how if we apply that to ourselves, you know. When the truth is presented to us, how we should be willing to listen and have an open mind, and if it's the truth, we need to make that change. Okay, any other comments? All right. So then the next thing that happens, the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. And Paul said to him, then Paul says this in verse 3, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law, and do you command me to be struck contrary to the law? And those who stood by said, do you revile God's high priest? So he strikes him on the mouth, okay, for what he said. And then Paul then has something he says back. Now, he says, God will strike you with you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law, and do you command you to be struck contrary to the law? So, was Paul incorrect at what he said here? No. Okay. But what did he do when he realized that he had said this to who? Didn't realize he was the high priest, right? And then Paul says, I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak evil of the ruler of your people. And if we jump back to Exodus chapter 22, I think it is, we can see that. verse 28 says, you shall not revile God nor curse a ruler of your people. So even though Paul was preaching Jesus, he still had respect for the high priest, didn't he? Still had respect. Okay. Okay, any other thoughts on that, those verses right there? Yeah, that's a good point. And so again, that's the same thought we're thinking of when the high priest makes a mistake and messes up, as you say, he doesn't correct that, but Paul does correct it. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. Yeah, that's true. He could have been put in by the Romans. That's a good point. And again, we see, I mean, we can see in this beginning of this chapter that the Romans are in control. They have, I mean, they call the council together, and they have to do what the Romans want them to do. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point too. So we in the end we do know that Paul didn't know, right? Paul did not know who the high priest was. Something that just came to my mind too was how long had Paul been gone on this third journey? Yeah, several years, right? So what, 3 years? So he had been gone for a while, and he's back in Jerusalem. he hadn't been in Jerusalem in maybe 5 years, I think, but possible. But it's been several years since he's been in Jerusalem. So it was a good point, though. Okay, anything else? Okay. So let's look at verse 6. So again, we see we've talked about this before with Paul in his perception, right? And again, he says, but when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, "Men and brethren, I'm a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged." And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. Okay, so we talked about this already. Why was the... Why was there this division? You had the Sadducees, you had the Pharisees. They're all here at this council. Mike said it a minute ago. What about the Sadducees? They don't believe in the resurrection, okay? And the Pharisees did, right? Okay. So now Paul sees that he's got the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And it says he perceives this, and then he says this. He makes his comment. He says, "Concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged." Well, this, of course, this creates a big problem, right? So now, here you have. Let's back up a minute. You've got the commander who's brought him before this council to try to find out what they're accusing Paul of, and. And then, as they begin, his plan to kind of find out what's happening, again, sort of backfires on him because now we've got this dissension, we've got this trouble between the two, and everything's beginning to kind of go out of control again. It says, and when he had a dissension rose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. Because what you just said, the Sadducees say there's no resurrection, no angel or spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. So here they are. They've got this situation now, and Paul has kind of said this and got them all stirred up. And it says in verse 9, there was a loud outcry, and the scribes who were the Pharisees' party arose and protested, saying, "We find no evil in this man. But if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God." And when there arose a great dissension, the commander, fearing lest Paul might be pulled to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force from among them and bring him into the barracks. So here again, problem arises. The way I picture it is, Paul says this, and everything seems to turn. The attention seems to turn away from him, and now they're arguing with each other. And then the commander says, "Okay, we need to move him out of here and get them back to the barracks before they kill them. So,
it's kind of amazing that the council was made up of both of these groups, and yet right now they're fighting because of this division that they have, decision that each one made about the resurrection, and yet they must have made it okay otherwise.
This never came up. Maybe that's the key right there. But here we have two groups that are meeting together, and they don't agree on the biggest thing, do they? The resurrection, right? Okay. Yeah. That's exactly right. And Paul, we see this in other occasions, right? The wisdom of Paul, and I have mentioned this before, how he perceives something, and he is able to make the right comments and do the right things that works in the way he wants it to. And that's exactly what you're saying, I believe. Yeah, good point. Anything else? Yeah, it could be that the Romans do look at them like, I don't understand them, you know. They don't even agree with each other, you know. So it's a good point. Anything else?
It's funny because, remember, he's arrested because they thought he took a Gentile into the temple and
defiled. Wait, say that again. I didn't hear you. Yeah, that's a good point. They're all there to hear Paul, and once he mentions the resurrection, then the Pharisees say, "Hey, he's okay, right?" And now we're going to leave him alone. And now they got all this fight going on, and it had to be a lot of chaos at that time. Okay. All right. So verse 10, we're going to finish out with this. He commanded the soldiers to go down, take them by force from among them, and bring them into the barracks. And then Wednesday night, we're going to go into we'll start with verse 11. See if I can get there. And I want to read this. We can talk about it for a minute, and then Gary's going to cover it on Wednesday. But the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome. Okay. So you can read over that verse quickly, right? And what you think about all that's in there. What did Paul he's just been dealing with, right? He's been beaten, right? And they've had to take him away because he's going to be killed. and all these things are going on. But did he know some of this was going to happen when he got to Jerusalem? Yeah, he knew something was going to happen to him, right? He was willing to die, so he was expecting that. But now he goes back to the barracks where they're keeping him, and it says, "Be of good cheer, be of good cheer." Okay, so this is Jesus talking to Paul. Be of good cheer. For as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome. Okay, so what does Paul now know? Is he going to die in Jerusalem? No. So he knows, he's been comforted. He knows that he's at least going to go to Rome. Where did he want to go? He wanted to go to Rome. Of course, I don't know if this is the way he wanted to go, but this is how it's working out. And so I think about that with ourselves, you know, as we go through our struggles and the things we go through. And, you know, Jesus says to him, be of good cheer, you know. And I think that's something that we can also remember and apply it to ourselves, right? We need to think that way. You know, we don't know what's in our future. But what do we know? And we should be imitate Paul. We just keep moving forward, don't we? We just keep moving forward. And that's what Paul did. Keep serving the Lord, keep serving the Lord, keep serving the Lord. Okay? And his desire, I think Gary might have mentioned this again Wednesday, his desire, his commitment was so strong. And I've said before that you think about Paul, that he's one that completely understands. He understands that his time is limited, and he wants to teach Jesus literally 24 hours a day. I mean, we even see that in him, right? And so that is Paul's desire. And now he's encouraged by Jesus not to worry, that you're going to go to Rome. And what other ways would that be encouraging to him? Yes. Yes. Paul was like us, right? He was human. And he had times when he was discouraged. So I think that's your point. And he needed this encouragement. But to have Jesus say to you, be of good cheer. That had to be an encouragement to him. And have you ever had those moments where you've been discouraged and somebody says something to you encouraging, and wow, it picks you up, and you can go on, right? And I think about Paul, after this was said to him, how he must have been so encouraged to be able to go on. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So they knew. He didn't have to say resurrection of Jesus. He said the resurrection, and they knew what he was talking about. That's right. All right, anything else? Okay. We're a couple minutes early, but the bell should be ringing in a minute or two. Any other comments? And I'd appreciate all your comments, too. They're very good. Thank you. All right. We'll close for the morning, and in just a minute, I think the bell will be ringing. Thank you.